Владимир Путин и Ангела Меркель.
Владимир Путин станет сегодня гостем крупнейшего в мире. Владимир Путин вылетит в Амстердам вместе с королем.
Carnival atmosphere greeted Vladimir Putin's visit to Europe this week, but probably not for reasons the Kremlin leader would approve. In Amsterdam, rainbow flags were flown at half-mast over buildings across the Dutch capital, including over City Hall. The city turned into a virtual block party, with floats cramming the canals and the streets filled with people carrying signs denouncing the discriminatory laws against gays and lesbians that have recently been passed in Russia. Dutch drag queen Dolly Belleflor performed a song called Stop, Stop, Stop Putin to the melody of the popular Bonnie M. song Ra Ra Rasputin. A website, PutinARainbow.com, posted Photoshop pictures of Putin decked out in the trademark rainbow colors of the LGBT movement. Earlier, during a stop at a trade fair in the German city of Hanover, Putin was also greeted by protesters. This time, the topless Ukrainian feminist group Femin. Putin's visit to Europe was intended to cement ties with Moscow's two most important EU trade partners, the Netherlands and Germany. But what it ended up doing was highlighting the widening chasm between Russia and the West, not just over LGBT rights, but over culture and humanitarian issues in general. The Kremlin's cultural Cold War with the West is intensifying. How is it playing at home? And what are the implications inside Russia? Hello, and welcome to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. On the Skype line from London, where he is now based, is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin of RFERL's Russian service and a contributor to the online magazine Politru. Welcome, Kirill. We miss you here in Prague, but hope you're getting settled comfortably in London.
Hello, it's okay in London. The city is full of Russians.
Yes, I imagine it is. Kirill, as Putin was being greeted with rainbows and topless women in Europe this week, there were also some interesting developments in Moscow on this culture war theme. The State Duma passed a bill in the first reading, a so-called blasphemy bill that would criminalize offending people's religious feelings. Also this week, Patriarch Kirill called feminism, quote, very dangerous, a very dangerous phenomenon that gives women the illusion of freedom, stressing they should focus on their families and children and leave working and making money to the men. Taken together, all these things have kind of set Russia against the West, but not politically in the sense we're used to, but culturally and on a societal level as well. How do you see these things being played out among Russians? How is this cultural Cold War playing inside Russia?
There are several illusions about the, you know, public mind or public consciousness or in Russia. If you look at Russian society from outside, you can see or you would see so-called traditional society, which is very, you know, with very close relations to Orthodox Church, to traditional values, and so on and so on, so on. If you look at the problem from inside the Russian society, you'll see a very deep divisions between the various social groups of this society. Of course, there are you know, certain people who believe in traditional values, especially in you know, Orthodox Church tradition and so on. And secondly, in this very traditional way of thinking about the role which women play in the society, in life, and so on. But don't forget that today, that recent Russian society is the product of Soviet society, is the product of Soviet times. And the Soviet project, so-called Soviet project of state, of ideology, of society, of class-free society, and so on, that was a modernist project. And it was based on the ideas of modern times, of the, you know, political and cultural modernists of the beginning of the 20th century. And these Soviet values, you can name them traditional, and they are actually traditional in some sense. But anyway, these traditional Soviet values are just opposite so-called traditional, you know, Orthodox or good old Russia values. There are two types of these traditions. And we can speak about, you know, post-Soviet Russian society as a traditional society. Anyway, there are two traditions. And don't forget that in some sense, of course, Russian society, recent Russian society is not so young as in some Asian countries, but there are a lot of young people who were born just in the end of Soviet times and after the end of Soviet times. And they used to live in a very open world. And this is, in my opinion, the third, you know, stream of traditions in modern Russian society, that in some sense it's very open, it's very modern, and public opinion in this part of the society is very, in some sense, it's very westernized. So if you are speaking about Putin's policy now towards values, so I'd like to introduce a term, values politics.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, yeah, that's clearly what's going on here.
Yes, and it's not a result of a real attitude of Russian society to these things. It's a political game, and Putin and his presidential administration is trying to play with various social groups, trying to trick some of them. For instance, they try to play with the tradition Christian or Orthodox values and at the same time to appeal to Soviet values. But in reality, these values are just opposite. And I think in the end, this play will fail.
Well, this sets up where I kind of wanted to take the discussion because, I mean, in a lot of ways, what Putin's doing, it seems to be doing, is saying, all right, these things like LGBT rights and feminism, these are for the sissies in the West. We're Orthodox Christians. We believe in traditional values. Right now, that seems to be good politics in the sense that right now, a majority of the society seems to, and I stress seems to, support this. But as you pointed out, with the younger generation coming up, this could turn into a liability in the future. And again, this is not unique to Russia. We see this. We've seen this kind of thing in the West. There was a time in the United States, not very long ago, as a matter of fact, when gay bashing was good politics, when feminist bashing was good politics. But as the last couple of elections have shown us, that is not the case anymore. Now, I don't want to draw a direct comparison here by any stretch of the imagination, but with this younger generation and this more globalized generation, younger generation of Russians coming up, is it going to get to a point soon where this playing on these cultural issues, and right now it's gay bashing, for lack of a better term, in Russia, is this going to turn into a liability for the Kremlin in the near future, do you think?
I think that it's, in some sense, this attitude, I'm, you know, speaking about your point one, about that now it seems that the majority of Russian society support this new political line of the Kremlin administration. Yes, that's so, but it's a paradox. But in this sense, Russian society is a Western sort or Western kind of society. You mentioned American society. Yes, of course, American public opinion. It was not ready for such things, 20 years ago.
Or even 10 years ago.
And even 10 years ago, and I agree. But this public consciousness is, changing slowly, but steadily. And the same we see with Russian public opinion, with Russian public consciousness. Of course, all these things which we are now discussing about, all these events around LGBT activity and so on, all these things were unthinkable to discuss 20 years ago in Russia.
Well, no, the homosexuality was illegal in the Soviet Union.
Yes, but not just from the state point of view or criminal point of view, but from the point of view of ordinary people.
Right.
They never discussed, I remember clearly, they never discussed such things. And now they discuss them, you know, in some sense openly.
Mm-hmm.
And the very process of putting all these points, all these problems into the focus of public interest, mm-hmm. it's very important. So in some sense, Putin and his, you know, aides, they played unconsciously, played a very important role in the progress.
Uh-huh. So by making this an issue, they're actually advancing the issue.
And that is one of the most political mistakes which been made from time to time by Russian state. For instance, it's just absolutely other story, but it's a very important example. In the beginning of 20th century, the initial point of the growing of trade union movement in Imperial Russia was a first trade union, which was had been organized by whom? By Russian police.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Russian police wanted to control everything, including, proletarian movement and so on. And that's why they decided that it's better for us to organize a first trade union under the control of secret police and so on, and to exclude the society or social democrats or revolutionaries from this process.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the end of this?
Well, we know what the end of that was, yeah.
Yes, and now we see absolutely the same. No one, excluding, you know, some circles in Moscow, St. Petersburg, and the intelligentsia in some provincial towns and cities of Russia, never discussed these problems
mm-hmm.
5 years ago.
And now everybody's talking about them.
That was not. That was just outside of public interest.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
now it's in the very center. So what is the result? I think the result will be the same.
That's you've already, I mean, you've anticipated and it to a degree answered my next question. But I mean, I couldn't help but remember back, and I believe it was 1990 or 1991, when the Soviet Union under Gorbachev first decriminalized homosexuality. If you remember this. And I remember thinking to myself, I was in the States at the time, of course, and I was thinking, my God, the Soviet Union is actually more progressive on this issue at this time than a lot of southern U.S. states like Alabama or Texas, where it was still a crime in those states. But in that time period, the West, the United States and the West as a whole, have moved to a point where now gay marriage is mainstream. Pretty much. It's not even a fringe issue anymore. It is mainstream, where it wasn't even on the agenda then, where Russia seems to be going backwards on this. So my question was going to be to you that, is Russia just behind the West on this issue, or is Russia in a different place entirely? You seem to think Russia's just behind and it's just a matter of time. Am I correct?
My firm idea, and I'm always repeating all these things, that Russia is a part of, Western. It's not civilization, it's not culture. I don't want to play with such, you know, terms, but it's a part of the West. And, of course, all these, you know, Western countries are different. And there are a huge difference between, say, Portugal and, Sweden.
Right.
And, of course, you can accuse me, or our audience could accuse me, that I'm downplaying the differences, the huge differences between Russia and, Western Europe, for instance. But I am absolutely sure that, of course, this division and these differences, they exist. But at the same time, Russia and West are in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
In the same place... if you imagine some sort of not geopolitical map, or maybe some historical and cultural map of the world, and there you can find Russia among Western countries, because Russian type of culture, the very type of culture, I'm not speaking about culture from capital letter, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, big culture.
Right.
It's everyday life. And so on.
The anthropological meaning of culture.
Anthropological sense, yes.
A system of shared meaning.
Yes. And in this sense, of course, Russia is a Western, the Russian society is Western society. If you look at, you know, the map of every Russian city and town, you will see the same European town. Of course, maybe a little bit more dirty, maybe not a little bit more, but much more dirty, and so on, but not so, you know, used to be useful and cozy and so on. But it's the same type of, you know, town and city. If you look at the way of even how Russian police works, of course, it's corrupted. And the court system, of course, it's corrupted. It's controlled now by the state and so on. But the very mechanism of how it works, you'll see it's a Western type of policing, of, you know, judging and so on and so on.
So the Slavophiles are wrong, in your opinion?
Yes.
I don't mean just morally wrong, but actually wrong in terms of interpreting what is actually happening. I wanted to touch on the issue of the Orthodox Church here a bit, too, because I haven't been able to quite figure this out entirely myself. Is the tail wagging the dog here, or is the dog wagging the tail? Putin has clearly thrown his lot in with the most conservative elements in society, and that, and of course, the centerpiece of that is the church. Are these cultural issues, these cultural values that are driving a bigger wedge between Russia and the West, are these being driven by the church or by the Kremlin, do you think? Who is using whom here?
I think Putin is using Orthodox Church, and this is very dangerous for the church itself. I am not, you know, a great admirer of Russian Orthodox Church, speaking, you know, frankly, but I am a little bit worried about its fate and about its future. It's an established institution of Russia. It's a very important part of Russian society, and so on, so on, so on. And now church is a very dangerous situation. I think now Russian Orthodox Church is in much more dangerous situation than it was in, you know, during the Patriarchate of Alexei. Because initially, everyone saw Patriarch Kirill as a more strong figure than Alexei. But now, as it turned out, he's very weak. He's very weak. He didn't initiate the reforms which the church needs so much for, you know, tens and tens of years. It couldn't uphold the independence of Russian Orthodox Church. It's putting Orthodox Church under, in some sense, under the state control. If you remember what was happening in the last years of Alexei Patriarchate, Alexei tried to influence somehow the state. That was the process, you know, with other direction. It was not the state which was tried to, you know, control Orthodox Church and use Orthodox Church in its end. Vice versa. It was church which was trying to use state in its own end.
And now the opposite thing is happening. You're feeling
absolutely.
That... So...
Absolutely, absolutely. And if we look at the real popularity of Russian Orthodox Church, I am not stating that it's, I'm not claiming that it's declining, but it's not stronger than it was 10 years ago. And in this, in Russian context, this is a disaster, because maybe the number of the believers in Orthodox Church are the same, I don't know. But all these people, they're getting older and older. There are no any, you know, fresh part, growing of the fresh part of supporters and believers in Orthodox faith. And the church is getting older and older, first of all. And secondly, its PR, public relations image, is getting worse and worse after all these things with, you know, Pussy Riot. And all these, you know, situations with priests who, you know, this Igumen Tikhon, who committed, you know, a real crime, being drunk on the Moscow roads. And state is still trying to, not the state, but the court is trying, and the police is trying to, you know, maybe to defend him in some sense. Everyone sees that, oh, What's going on?
And then all the scandals surrounding the patriarch's watch and apartment and so on as well. And the...
So I'm claiming that Russian Orthodox Church is becoming less and less popular among non-believers. And that is the third very dangerous tendency in the modern Russian society, because church is not only for those who believe in God. The church is not about only those who are inside the church wall. The church is for all the world, yes. And if the church doesn't care about those who are outside this wall, that is a very serious problem. That is a disaster. Just compare the behavior of the Russian Orthodox Church and Roman Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. Well, and certainly under Pope Francis of the Roman Catholic Church as well.
And you'll see a huge difference between them, because the Catholic Church is very social active, very, especially among poor.
Yeah, and under the current Pope, it will become even more so, I imagine.
Yes. And have you, ever hear about any activity of Russian Orthodox Church on the high level among poor? No. Definitely no.
Right. No, and another thing I would add is, if you look in other parts of the, not just the former Soviet space, but the former socialist countries of Eastern Europe, we just put a story out this week about the amazing strides that Moldova has made on LGBT issues. There, again, another country with the Soviet past, a country with a very strong Orthodox Church and a very traditional population. But for some reason, in this little, very poor country, you're seeing enormous strides being made on this issue. And another thing I would raise is Poland, which is a EU country and a NATO country, but at the same country also with the experience of communism. But also, more importantly for this discussion, where with a very traditional population, a very pious nation, very Roman Catholic nation. And until very recently, a country where LGBT rights did not get a lot of mileage. But very recently, I don't know if you follow this, Lech Walesa made some comments saying that there were some gay MPs in the Polish parliament. And he said they should sit in the back of the parliament because that is their place. And this caused an uproar and really, really damaged Walesa's image. And even some parliamentarians in the Polish parliament who would sit in the front row gave up their seats to symbolically say, Walesa, you are wrong. And this is so you're seeing progress on these issues. It remains to be seen, I guess, whether this gap between that's opening up between Russia and the West on this and other issues is going to widen, or whether it's going to narrow. In a few moments, we'll continue our discussion of the cultural Cold War between the Kremlin and the West, and look at the extent to which Russia is becoming isolated on these issues. I'd like to remind you that you are listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. On the Skype line from London is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin of RFERL's Russian service and a contributor to the online magazine Politru. I'd also like to remind you could subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You can read the Power Vertical blog at RFERL.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical. That, of course, was Mark Knopfler, founder and frontman of the legendary British band Dire Straits, playing in Moscow back in 2008. It's a sound Muscovites won't be hearing anytime soon, at least not live. Earlier this month, Knopfler announced on his website that he was canceling upcoming shows in Moscow and St. Petersburg over rights violations in Russia. I've always loved playing in Russia and have great affection for the country and the people, he wrote. I hope the current climate will change soon. I couldn't help but recall the time when artists and musicians boycotted South Africa over apartheid back in the 1980s, which turned out to be a very effective campaign. Kirill, how great is the risk that Putin's cultural war with the West will lead to Russia's cultural isolation There will be more Mark Knopflers that are canceling shows that Russians truly do want to see. What are the implications of this?
Well, first of all, of course, Mark Knopfler, he is a great musician. I'm not, you know, a great fan of him, but anyway. And of course, this opinion and this gesture is of some importance for some people in Russia. I don't like to exaggerate the meaning and the influence of such gestures, but anyway, this is, you know, it's another brick in the wall.
Right.
It's not, you know, an iron wall or iron curtain or something like this, but it's not a wall at all. It's a kind of a sort of new building. It's not a building of new Russian cultural isolation. I'm not sure that we can speak in modern world about in the modern world about isolation. Any of any sort, excluding the example of North Korea.
Right.
Yes, in the modern world, it's just impossible. We have Facebook, internet, and so on, so on, and so on. Yes, and if you want to listen to Dire Straits, you can just open, you know, YouTube. And
of course you can. I can watch any band I want on YouTube, but sometimes I like to see my favorite band live.
And yes, what kind of an yes, I agree,
of
course.
And there's a lot of Muscovites that are going to say, well, damn, I wanted to see Mark Knopfler, or who's going to be next? Is Madonna ever going to play in Russia again, I wonder, for example? You know, is Faith No More going to play in Russia again? All of these bands that came out during the against the trial of Pussy Riot. At the time, I was thinking, and at the time I began thinking that this could turn into a cultural boycott was around the time of the Pussy Riot trial, and certainly about by the time of Madonna's famous concerts in Petersburg and Moscow last year. And the ensuing lawsuits and threats of criminal charges that came as a result of what she said on stage. So she just recently made a comment at an award ceremony criticizing Russia over rights violations, over LGBT issues in the Pussy Riot trial and other things. And you have to wonder if this is beginning to take a snowball effect. And if it does, if it's going to actually be depriving Russian citizens of things they want, that is to see your favorite band live, your favorite classical pianist live or whatever, or is going to prevent Russian artists from performing in the West because it can go the other way as well. If this cultural Cold War, as I've kind of dubbed it, continues, do you think that'll have larger political implications at some point? It certainly did in South Africa.
Let's divide this problem into several parts. First of all, of course, there are several examples of such cultural boycott of several countries. You're absolutely right. It was South Africa. That was, by the way, USSR after the beginning of Afghan war. Mm-hmm. Don't forget about it was not a cultural boycott, but it was sports.
The Olympic boycott, yeah.
Moscow Olympic Games. So this is one of the instruments of the tools of modern cultural politics or political culture. You can, right. You can use both of these terms. But another question is, what is the influence of such gestures and so on? And in this sense, I'd like to divide all these artists and all the singers and so on into several levels. Cultural establishment. We can't speak now about any, by the way, social or political influence of rock music. Rock music now, it's not about all these things. Of course, several rock musicians, you know, Bono and so on, can make statements, political statements or something like this. But the result of all these things is close to zero. Mark Knopfler is a part of this cultural establishment, of course. He is not just a rock musician or pop musician or whoever. He is part of cultural establishment. And of course, the opinion of world cultural establishment is in some sense important for the governments. Not for the society, but for the governments. And in this sense, this gesture of Mark Knopfler was of some importance for maybe for Putin himself or for Dmitry Medvedev himself and so
there's
on.
There's a stigma attached to an artist of the caliber and level of Mark Knopfler saying, I am not going to play in Russia because I don't like what's going on there. That carries a little bit of weight. Just like what Madonna said and did in Petersburg and Moscow carried some weight. And if you want to go down to, you know, Faith No More it's a band I love, but it certainly doesn't have the name recognition of a Madonna or a Mark Knopfler. But what they got the ball rolling. They were the first ones that did it when they donned the masks during their show in Moscow in support of Pussy Riot and had actually Pussy Riot members come on the stage with them. That was a pretty bold gesture. But when somebody of the caliber of Mark Knopfler says, I am not going to play in this country until this situation changes. I think that's pretty powerful, especially if it spreads and if others follow his lead.
I agree, it's powerful, but this blow is aimed on the government and the state and the regime, but not, it's not very important for the public opinion in Russia. But do you remember all these discussions about cultural boycott of St. Petersburg after the local parliament?
Yeah. Los Angeles just the Los yeah. Angeles City Council is going to look at severing its sister city ties with and if I am not mistaken, Venice is doing the same.
Yes, and I think Milan or Turin. I forgot.
Yeah, and Paris is also a sister city of St. Petersburg. You wonder if they're gonna follow suit.
And I, in this sense, I believe in such activity, in such behavior, in such strategy. I think that in modern world, local politics, local gestures, local initiatives are much more powerful than such statements like Mark Knopfler's and so on. It's not that St. Petersburg is so closed to Venice, for instance. Of course, it's, North and Venice and so on. Right. But anyway, it's a very serious blow to St. Petersburg, Duma, and the local government bureaucrats.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very serious blow to local cultural joint initiatives and, projects.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, St. Petersburg and Venice tried to, say, organize some exhibition together. And now it's, end up with nothing.
Right.
And I think the most powerful gesture against all this discrimination of LGBT activists and so on had been made not by Mark Knopfler, but by Stephen Fry, who actually came to St. Petersburg and met with this...
With Milonov, with Vitaly Milonov, yeah.
Made a fool of him.
Yeah, he did make a fool of him.
Yes. And that was much more powerful than, Knopfler's. Of course, I respect his decision and so on. But anyway, in public opinion, because I followed all these reactions to Stephen Fry's visit to St. Petersburg, mm-hmm. that was, a bomb.
Yeah, yeah.
And Knopfler, no one, I think, not no one, but just very rare, in rare occasions, I saw any reaction to his gesture.
So
but you could read about this in the newspapers. It's absolutely other audience.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And it was interesting how it was played in the Russian newspapers as well. Now, if I hear you correctly, you seem to be saying that the value of these things is more in the symbolic sense than in the material loss. Things like boycotts and things like that the symbolism and the stigma for the elite is more dangerous to them than maybe the public being deprived of having access to these events like a Mark Knopfler concert, if you will. Am I correct in interpreting that?
Yes, I agree. It's my opinion that in modern world, the symbolic gestures and symbolic things and symbolic blows are much more serious and important than so-called real ones.
Right.
Because we have a global world, and you can do a lot of harm just with symbolic gestures and just several words, just typing them on your Twitter line, and that is the most important thing. Knopfler, of course, it was a great disappointment for his fans in Russia. That was a great disappointment for producer centers or companies who invited him into Russia, and they lost some money and so on. But the main aim of his statement was of his refusal. I remember, by the way, the name of the last album of Morrissey, An Age of Refusal. Yeah. And we are speaking about the Age of Refusal. So I think the most harm, there was much more, that Mark Knopfler brought much more harm to the public image of Putin himself and the highest ranks of the regime than to disappointment to Russian society or something like that.
Well, to bring us full circle before we wrap up, I wanted to throw this question out just for the last question. Is that I mean, the Putin's policy towards not just the LGBT community, but in general, the crackdown on the NGOs, the patriarch's comments about feminism, which reflects the general attitude of the Orthodox Church. These are all taking Russia out of what's now considered kind of mainstream global culture in a lot of ways. It's not just the West. It's not just the West. I mean, Uruguay just passed a gay marriage law, for God's sakes. So we're not just talking about Russia and the West here. Putin is taking Russia out of the mainstream of global society right now. Now, he seems to be making a calculation here that Russians like being unique. This is going to play not just because of the conservative nature of the society and that LGBT issues have not advanced as far in Russia, but that he's playing to Russia's uniqueness and that we are different from all of the rest of the world here. Is he right? Or, because my experience is, I mean, maybe it just reflects the company I kept while I was in Russia, but people wanted to be part of the main, they really yearned to be part of the mainstream world culture, in my experience. How do you see it?
I'm absolutely sure that he's absolutely wrong in all his positions and all his, you know.
Tell us what you really think.
In all his behavior in this direction, by the way, just in this direction. First of all, it's a part of his suicide line of, freezing Russia. He is not trying to solve the problems, the real problems, which there are a lot of them, you know, in Russia, political, social, economic, cultural, whatever. He is trying to just to keep status quo. But if you try to keep status quo, you have to make, an exceeding gesture in all the, in all the directions. Because if you want to stay at the one point, to make much more moves than if you want to really to move on.
Well, yes, because the world is moving the other direction, and to move against that, you have to move backwards. Yeah.
Yes, you try to balance, and in this attempt to keep the balance, you're trying to hold anything that you think which are important for you. And I think this traditional values and Orthodox Church is one of these things which appeared before him just accidentally. And the most important role in this so-called new course or new, strategy of Putin was Pussy Riot case. Secondly, that is not a real state politics. It's not a serious state politics. It's not a serious strategic line or strategic course of the recent Putin administration, because the main problem of Russian society and Russian, economy and social and so on is modernization. Their country, their society, their economy terribly needs modernization. Instead of modernization, he's doing, these gestures in the all about, the traditional values and so on. And that is my fourth point. He is trying to say that we are different, we are absolutely different from all, Western world and so on, but he's unable to define somehow this uniqueness. So he's speaking about total zero. it's like, you know, you're trying to say, I'm total zero, but I'm unique. That's why we are different from all these, you know, all other numbers.
And I guess to wrap up, you would say the time is definitely not on his side in this sense. I guess we'll see how that turns out.
Sure, because he is just annoying, not just his own society. He is annoying and elite.
Yeah.
That is dangerous.
Yeah, and he seems to be annoying the Dutch, judging from what I saw on the streets of Amsterdam this week. Unfortunately, that's about all we have time for today. I'd like to remind you, you've been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. On the Skype line from London has been my regular co-host Kirill Coburn of RFERL's Russian service and a contributor to the online magazine Politru. Thanks for the great discussion, Kirill.
My pleasure.
I'd also like to thank our brilliant producer, Tanya Koncheva, and my indispensable colleague, Pavel Butorin, proprietor of the equally indispensable Twitter feed, Russia Police Watch, which you can and most certainly should follow at Rus Police Watch. I'd also like to remind you, you could subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You could read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org, and you can follow us on the Twitter at Power Vertical. The Power Vertical podcast will take a break next week, as I will be traveling in the South Caucasus. And now, as always, I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper Noise MC.